Hey there, it's Melissa Brunetti, and welcome to the Mind Your Own Karma podcast.
Hey there, Karma crew. Thanks for joining me for this episode of Mind Your Own Karma, The Adoption Chronicles. Today is part two of my interview with Monique Pangari. Let me remind you a little bit about Monique. She is an MED, SEP is a certified trauma psychotherapist, educator, supervisor, trainer, and survivor of mother-infant separation and adoption trauma. She was born in Australia in 1972 at the height of the forced adoption era. Relinquished at birth and adopted at 6 weeks of age, Monique was driven to study psychotherapy and psychology to try to make sense of something no one was talking about. She has spent her 30-plus year career studying, integrating, and teaching others about the significance of relational attachment, the impacts of preverbal trauma, and the dynamics of families where relational attachment disruption has occurred. Monique has worked with many adoptees, birth mothers, and adoptive parents, both in a government-funded organization and in private practice. She specializes in mind-body integration for addressing complex developmental trauma. Through her business, Healing Adoption Trauma, Monique offers therapy, consultation, supervision, online webinars, and training for professionals specifically for adoptees, their families, and other providers working with this population. Her work centers on healing the pain of relinquishment trauma, family separation, and cultural loss, with a special focus on the experience and impact of mother-infant separation. Adoptees Connect, a free monthly meeting for adult adoptees, is hosted and facilitated by Monique and her partner, who is also adopted, on the Sunshine Coast of Queensland, Australia. Here is my second interview with Monique Pangari. Yeah. So you talked a little bit about how adoption affected you growing up and, you know, the drinking and things like that, that now you can look back. How do you feel about being an adopted person now?
Ah, that's a good question. How do I feel now? I guess it's just a part of me. It's not all of me, but it feels sometimes it's all of me. But these days, less so. I think as a therapist, you know, I'm very into my own personal journey and have been for the last few decades. So I'm always exploring my inner world, I guess. And the more deep dives I keep doing into that, the more I keep finding more of my own unique self, you know, that supports my life and my choices and that guides me. And I guess in recent years, the last decade, I guess I've really gotten into understanding attachment theory and understanding somatic or healing trauma, which is for me through a somatic lens. And so integrating attachment and trauma theory and therapy into my world has really supported me, I guess, to find that deeper sense of self that's not reliant on the outer world so much.
Do you believe that you can heal from the primal wound?
Yeah, I do. I mean, if you had asked me that a few years ago, I probably would have said no, or I would have been very perplexed. I would have wanted to say yes. But I would say where I'm at now, I don't think I'll, you know, it depends what you determine as healing. But certainly I function a lot better in my life. I'm not overwhelmed by experiences related to adoption. I mean, adoption is forever showing up in my life. It just weaves its way into challenges around relating and it shows up in my world in terms of perfectionism. Those are common threads for adoptees. So it's not like it's over, you know. I just continue to keep opening layers of it and layers of it. So whether that's, I would see that as healing, you know, that a willingness to keep diving into those layers and to keep exploring them and understanding them. through the lens of what I understand as the mother-infant separation wound that I think will be with me forever.
Yeah. So let's dive into your therapies a little bit. I was on your website, and I saw you have quite a few certifications and a variety of therapies that you offer. And I just picked some that I wanted to know more about myself. So
Great.
if you could explain what they are and the benefits of each one. And I kind of want, I know a little bit about sand play therapy, but I don't think a lot of people know about that. So let's start with that one.
Yeah. Great. Yes. So, well, I was introduced to sand play therapy 20 years ago when I first started training to become a counselor. And yeah, and then I started well, after graduation, I opened up my own private practice and started offering sand play therapy mostly to children. And it's a non-verbal therapy, so it's beautiful with children. It's based on play and creativity. And basically what it is, I don't know if you can see, actually, you probably can't see very well, but behind me I have some shelves. This is my therapy room. So I have a lot of shelves set up, and on the shelves are little figurines that we call symbols. And there's a tray. We have a tray full of sand, about half full of sand, and the tray is painted blue on the inside to represent sand, to represent water or sky. And basically, they're little 3D worlds. So a client would come in. I started out working with children, but I work a lot mostly with adults these days. So it's a modality that can be used for all ages. But the client basically sits in front of the sand tray, and they can let their hands move in the sand. The sand itself is very regulating for the nervous system. So I often see clients put their hand in the sand, and they'll either just be a big sigh, as a regulating sigh that comes. Or sometimes tears just automatically come when the hands go in the sand. There's something really quite amazing about the containment of the tray, and the texture of the sand. And they can choose whether they have dry sand or wet sand, as dry sand is a bit more fluid, and wet sand is more malleable. You can construct shapes and things. And then when they're ready, they can head to the symbol collection, all of the little figurines, and just start to choose symbols. And this is a process that kind of accesses the unconscious or the implicit memory. So the parts of us that we don't have an explicit memory for, but that our body has an awareness of. And yeah, often people will choose symbols and they'll go, I don't know why I picked that. And then they'll put them in the tray, and then they move them around for a bit till it's like, it's very somatic in the sense that the body just knows, yeah, okay, that's it. That's done. I don't know why. I don't know what just happened there, but that's the picture. And then I'll usually ask them if they want to share anything, and they'll usually, as they're sharing a little bit, they'll go, oh, well, actually, this one reminds me of my grandfather, or this one reminds me of that fairy tale about the frog and the prince, or so they'll kind of make associations as they're going. And then over the course of some time, some clarity comes at a conscious level. But usually sand play is done over a series of sessions. So usually they go away and then come back and do another tray, go away, come back and do another tray. And over time, the impressions of those symbols, they're archetypes, so they impress on the unconscious. And it's probably one of the most amazing modalities I've ever experienced, in the sense that whilst not everybody knows what's happening in the tray and what they're experiencing, things change in their life. When I was working with children a lot, I'd have children from Department of Child Safety referred to my service, and children who'd experienced a lot of child protection issues and were in foster care. And I used to have a lot of the foster care, the caseworkers say to me, "What are you doing in there? What are you talking about?" And I'm like, "Well, we're not talking about anything. We're playing." And they're like, "Well, they've just completely changed. Like, they're not doing that behavior anymore." So There's a lot of shifts and changes that happen in one's outer world as they face challenges and things through their play and through the creativity of creating these worlds in the tray. So for me, I've just always loved working with it. I've gone back to do further training in the last couple of years. And the more I learn about it, the more mysterious in some ways it becomes. It's almost a bit of an addiction now. I've also done my own personal process in it. I'm still going through my own personal process in sand play therapy. And again, I'm just awed by the process itself and what comes up. And as I look back at my trays, I can see, oh God, this is really an adoption healing process. As I go through, there's a lot that comes up about wombs and babies and mothers and things like that just seem to kind of come out in my tray.
That comes out when I'm doing my somatic stuff too. Gone back in the womb and a couple times and just some crazy journeys. It's like, what just happened? But yeah. And it's such a gentle therapy that it almost feels too easy. You know, it's like you feel like you need to have like a big cry or a, you know, huge like, but you really don't. And like you said, it just really affects your outer world. It really does. So let's talk about oh, go ahead. There's something else you
I
want to
was
say
just
about it?
going to say one of the things I love about it is it accesses preverbal trauma. And so all of the modalities that I have not consciously chosen over the years, but I look back now and go, oh, of course I chose those therapies. They're all about accessing nonverbal trauma, which is the wound for adopted people, right? It's we don't remember what happened to us back then at an explicit level. Our explicit memory doesn't remember, but our implicit memory does. Our body remembers. So, all of the modalities I've chosen seem to access that much deeper wound, and that's why I love working with them.
So let's talk about dynamic attachment repatterning experience, DARE.
DARE. DARE is the acronym for that big long word, big long name. So DARE was created by Dr. Diane Poole Heller. She's in Colorado in the States. And I came across her work, gosh, it was a few years after my divorce, and I started dating, got into the dating world. And so I knew a lot about attachment in my earlier career about parent-child attachment. But after my divorce, I've heard Daniel Siegel talk about adult attachment and the adult attachment interview, and I was like, oh, I didn't know about that. This was a long time ago now, and I went home and I did an online adult attachment quiz, and I didn't like the result, and I went, oh, I'm not. That's too scary for me. I put that away for a couple of years. And then I started dating, and eventually, a few years later, after my divorce, and got out into the dating world. And that's like, walking around in the world with no skin on. That was just terrifying, terrifying for an adopted person. And I was getting into all sorts of, push-pull type relating, and really feeling that attachment ache of crazy kind of pursuing behavior of the other person. And none of this happened in my marriage. I had a pretty secure marriage. So it was completely new to me. I didn't understand what was happening. So I went back to this attachment piece and just started reading as much as I could read about attachment. And I discovered Diane Poole Heller's work. And then she ended up writing the book, The Power of Attachment. And in 2017, I flew over to America to do her training, the DARE training, to become a DARE practitioner. So, that was a really deep dive. But in addition to that, or before I did that, actually, I also did some training in Circle of Security, which is more about parent-child attachment. And then I also did training in emotion focused therapy for couples, which is a couples therapy based on attachment theory. So I really, really studied attachment in all of the different areas, parent-child, couples, and then individual, looking at your own individual attachment style and how to shift it and move it towards a more secure relational style. So, yeah, the combination of all of those different trainings over about 10, well, maybe not that long, maybe over about 8 years, led me to, yeah, working a lot with attachment with my own clients, and seeing how significant that is for adoptees to have an understanding of.
Let's talk about the one I'm really excited to discuss, the somatic attachment focused expressive therapies.
So SAFETY is the acronym for that. So SAFETY is my own creation. Basically, it's a blend of somatic psychology, expressive therapies, which I've also trained extensively in, and the attachment work. So expressive therapies and somatic psychology are two ways of working with our clients. And then attachment is a theory, I guess, of understanding a framework of how we attach and what happens when we don't attach securely. And so using expressive therapy modalities, I kind of teach other therapists about attachment through the lens of trauma and somatic psychology.
I'm curious what modalities you see have the most positive results, especially regarding adoptees.
Well, my go-tos are somatic psychology and sand play therapy. And I'm also trained in another modality called neuroaffective touch by Dr. Aileen LaPierre. And over the last 3 years, I've been training with her in the neuroaffective touch training. And last year I flew over to LA to complete my foundation studies with her. And neuroaffective touch is using therapeutic touch in the counseling room to really access, I guess, very early developmental trauma, so baby states, really. So in the training, we learn a lot about when we're in the womb and what can happen to us neurobiologically when we've experienced trauma at those very early stages, or straight after birth. And so neuroaffective touch it's nonverbal in a sense. It's not completely nonverbal. We have what we call mind-body dialogues with clients while also applying therapeutic touch. So I'm doing this, you can't see my hands, but we might just, bring some touch to the shoulder blade or to behind the head or to where we know the vagus nerve is. We might bring some touch there, and we might bring some touch to the heart space at the front. We use a lot of props like heated cushions that kind of provide weight. I don't know if you've ever noticed, when somebody comes up and they just maybe put a hand on your shoulder, there's a relaxation that can happen in the body, not always, but if it's somebody we trust. I know myself personally as an adopted person, I grew up in a family with no affection whatsoever. There was no touch. And I had skin hunger. It's a terminology that is in the literature about babies that don't get touched. And I definitely recognize that throughout my childhood. It's what made me quite susceptible to being sexually abused, actually. Mm. And then as an adult, even today, now, as soon as my partner just puts their hands on me, I'm like, oh, more. I definitely experience skin hunger. And so my body kind of craves touch, but that's not the case for everybody. Some people don't like touch at all. So it can be healing on the sense of, bringing in touch in ways that you get to negotiate. So it could start with just putting heated pillows on the body so there's no actual physical touch, and seeing, well, what does that feel like? And then negotiating touch so that you're in control of that. And it has incredibly healing powers. And then we dialogue with the body so that we can bring the body into relationship with the mind.
Mm-hmm.
So that the mind's not running the show. So one of the things I see with adopted people is, and myself included, is a high level of intellectualization. Some of my clients at the moment are pretty, they understand, you know, they say to me, well, I tend to intellectualize everything. And there's a fear of going into the body, right?
Yeah.
That's where the trauma is. So that intellectualization is a protective factor and something I have found really difficult to drop myself in my own journey. But when I'm working with another therapist that I trust that's able to help me access my body in safe ways, then I'm like, oh, I do have a body. Oh, there you go. That's nice.
Yeah.
I did, you know, I generally have thought that I've been dissociated a lot, particularly probably through my 20s and 30s. Alcohol doesn't help with that. It's taking you out of your body. So, the more recent years has been a lot about coming back into my body, listening to the messages from my body, and trusting those messages. So touch is a really important part of that, as well as tracking sensation in the body and being able to stay with those sensations and allowing completion of defenses to move through the body so that there's so they're not stuck, so those impulses are not stuck inside. Yeah.
So I don't think a lot of people understand when we talk about pre-verbal trauma, you know, they think we're babies, we don't remember, so it doesn't matter.
Right.
Can you talk about or explain pre-verbal trauma a little bit?
Yeah, it depends who you read in the literature. Actually, I went on a big search around the definition for this a little while ago. Some people describe pre-verbal trauma as that very early stage, like before 2 years of age, before that part of the memory of the brain comes online. But Bessel van der Kolk actually says that pre-verbal trauma is any trauma that we experience. It doesn't matter what age we are, because the Broca's area of the brain goes offline when something is overwhelming to the system. So pre-verbal simply means we don't have words for it. So it can be from when we're a child because we don't have memory of that, but it also can be from when we're an adult and we don't have memory of it because it's that part of our brain has gone offline, and trauma is held in our implicit memory, which means we don't have that explicit memory of it. So finding therapeutic tools that access implicit memory is the key to working with early developmental trauma, or any trauma, really, actually, any trauma. So even if you've been traumatized later in life, that's important.
So why do you think that somatic therapy is kind of, I don't know, I feel like it's super important for the adoptee. You know, we do a lot of talk therapy, but I think that only gets us so far. It's not that it's, you know, a bad thing, but it just gets us so far. And then you've got that part that you said, like, is stuck in the body. So why do you think somatic therapy is so important?
Well, for some of the reasons I've spoken about, that we can, as adoptees, we can over-intellectualize, so we can get stuck in the head, which is a protective factor, and kind of not really know what's going on in our bodies. And if we don't know what's going on in our bodies, we're not following our gut instinct. And for adoptees who, you know, we struggle with identity and knowing who we are, we didn't get biological mirroring, which are inherent ways that we get mirrored back who we are. When those things are missing, we tend to look outward for ways to behave. And I know for me personally, that's gotten me into a lot of trouble. I don't always listen to what's happening inside. So since I've started training in and doing my own work somatically, I'm more able to check in with my body first and go, oh, my heart's racing. Okay, something's happening here I need to pay attention to. Or my hands are sweating. Or, oh, my breath is really shallow right now. Okay. How connected am I to my body? Am I listening to my body? And when we're not listening to our body, we miss red flags. We make choices based on what we think other people want because we're pretty good people pleasers. Because we're used to adapting. We're used to adapting to keep the love that we that often feels like it's going to be taken away from us pretty quickly. So we're good adapters. That's an attachment wound. And when we're not in contact with what's happening inside, we lose connection to who we really are. So I think somatic work is vital for finding that essence of who we are, where we're actually going inside, which to me brings huge relief. You know, if you're somebody who's not been able to do a reunion, and you've never met biological family, so you miss that puzzle piece, I guess, of seeing or being around family members, then they might always feel like there's something missing. And for many, many, many different reasons, I guess, it's important to develop that relationship with our body. The other reason I would say is important is sometimes when we connect with the body, we can get more of a sense of the inner child, the child within that's been encapsulated back there, mm-hmm. at that, yeah, at those younger stages. And the body can often give us those messages from when we were much younger. Yeah, I know, because I'm in my 50s now, so when I was doing my training, there was a lot of John Bradley's work around working with the inner child. And for me personally, I don't know whether other adoptees that are therapists have experienced this, but I was really anti-inner child work for so long. I was just like, I'm not interested in that. There's no little child living inside of me. Something in me just had a very strong, no, I'm not going into that.
Yeah.
But when I started getting into somatic work and I started exploring mind-body dialogues and listening to the things my body was saying to me, I was like, oh, this is like a parent-child relationship going on. My mind is overriding my body all of the time. My body is kind of going, I don't trust you. You know, you don't listen to me.
Yeah.
And that was a way that I started to access my inner child world, I guess, which is really vitally important for us adoptees to be able to know that we have encapsulated child states, these memory states that live in our body that haven't actually grown up yet. And we can get in contact with them,
mm-hmm.
and we can bring our self essence to them,
yes.
The part of us that is never wounded, the part of that everybody has a sense of self. We can bring that self to these younger parts inside, and have them unburden in a way, and see that we've grown up and that we can look after them now.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So how has your personal lived experience as an adoptee, how has that impacted your career, do you think?
Well, it's funny, like I didn't start out thinking I was going to work in adoption, and I didn't start out thinking that all the different modalities I was studying in had anything to do with my own adoption healing. I guess some part of me did know, but I pretty much was just, I thought I was training in modalities to help my clients, you know, the clients that were showing up at the time was like, oh, I think I need to do that training because I don't know enough about that, you know, for this client or that client. But in hindsight, it's so obvious to me now that I was training in modalities related to adoption. So as I said, I started working at PASC, Post-Adoption Support Queensland. That was probably about 5 years ago now, maybe 4 or 5 years ago. And that's when I guess I started, it was like another coming out of the fog for me. I feel like I've had about 6 or 7 coming out of the fog.
Yes, I know. Just when you think you're out, here comes right, another layer.
You go back in again. I got to be able to talk about adoption all day, every day with colleagues. It was like, wow, we're allowed to talk about this. Like,
I know.
My whole life, so it's been a secret, you know. So, and I'd already been doing a lot of study in trauma and attachment at that point, and mm-hmm. was able to then start working with adoptees. So I've been working with adoptees now for about the last 5 years, and slowly, slowly kind of transitioning my work into that field. In fact, only just last week, I've just changed my website and changed my business really from a teaching training supervision model, which I've been doing for the last 5 years, into a business that I now call Healing Adoption Trauma. Mm. So it's taken me a really long time to feel courageous enough, I think, to step into that as a specialized area, and let go of my trainings that I've been doing for the last 16 years. But they'll show up in other forms. Yeah. So my work now is going to be about running monthly webinars for adoptees, and so that we can build some community for adopted people and talk about things to me, because I've been in this field for quite a while now, things that seem really obvious to me. But when I speak with adoptees here in Australia, a lot of them don't know about some of the concepts around coming out of the fog or the forced adoption era. They don't really know a lot about the history of the forced adoption era. And these are things I have only really found out in recent years as well, since joining PASC. So I'm really keen to provide information about the history of adoption in Australia and around the world. And I'm interested in looking at how we can actually decolonize adoption, and how we can become more authentically ourselves. The aim is to run monthly webinars that adoptees can attend, as well as monthly lectures for the adoption constellation. So I'll be centering adoptee voices, because I think those are the voices that usually are not centered. So centering adoptee voices, but also providing education for other members of the adoption constellation, so other counsellors, therapists, and support workers in foster care, adoptive parents, family members, anybody else that's interested in learning about adoption. So there'll be different spaces to the adoptee-only spaces, that's some similar content. And then I'm also working on creating a new training for therapists to become more up to date, I guess, with how to work with the adoption wound.
Yeah.
Because we just don't have.
Yeah, you don't. We don't.
Many adoption competent therapists in Australia. I know you guys have got a few in America. You've got some amazing voices over there that I follow and feel grateful for and am able to be informed by as well. But here in Australia, it's kind of limited. I did a talk last year to the Australian Counsellors Association chapter meeting. There was about 30 counsellors there, and I decided to do it about post-adoption counselling. And yeah, I was blown away by the response. It was such a positive response from people that were there, but also people like, we didn't know this was an area of work. And then the number of people that, since I've been talking about adoption, the number of other therapists say, oh, I've got an adopted client, you know, can you give me information about this or that? So I get asked a lot for resources or information from other therapists. So I'm wanting to put together a training that's accredited for counselors, psychologists, social workers that might come across adoptees in their practice as well.
So needed. Well, in closing, I always like to ask, what do you want struggling adoptees to know?
Oh, dear struggling adoptees. Just asking that question just really takes me to my heart. Because I so know the pain of what it's like to struggle as an adoptee. I guess the first thing I want to say is that you're not alone. You're absolutely not alone. Reach out to other adoptees. There are Facebook groups, many, many Facebook groups that you can join with conversations with other adoptees. Get support. Look for an adoption competent therapist. If you go to Instagram and type in hashtag adoption trauma or adoptee voices, you will find so many voices out there talking about adoption. And the other thing I would say is trust yourself as much as you can. Come back to listening to your own inner voices. It is a confusing ride, and other people's voices can take you off course. So journal, listen to yourself, write things down, get support, and trust yourself. Yeah.
Yeah.
And
it's a
you're
very
and you're
personal
meant to
journey.
be here. Yeah. So you're meant to be here. You belong here. That's what I would say. Yeah.
So where can we find you if someone's interested in contacting you? You have a website
now.
You
can. My website is just my name, so www.moniquepangari.com. And I'm in the process of updating it right now. So if you go there right now, it's a little bit messy, but it's got the gist of it. I've just been working on the front page, and then I'll have to start working on all the other pages. So it's going to be a little bit of a process over time. I'm in that process of changing my website content, but that's definitely where you can find me. It's on my website. I also have an Instagram page called Healing Adoption Trauma and a Facebook page called Healing Adoption Trauma as well. So you can find me on those social media places.
Well, I just want to thank you for everything you do and are doing for the adoption community and just the ways that you're bringing some of this, these other kind of modalities to light, because like I said, I feel like traditional therapies sometimes aren't enough for the adoptee.
Yes.
And so some of these other somatics and like the sand therapy and things like that, I really feel is getting a little bit deeper to the root of things and helping adoptees heal. So
definitely.
Thank you for talking about all that on the show today.
Thank you so much. It's been such a pleasure to meet you and to finally connect.
Yes.
Well, to get here, but I really appreciate it. Yeah. Thank you for
Well,
all you're doing to get everybody's voices out.
Thank you.
Wonderful.
I hope you enjoyed listening to some of these therapies that are coming out. I'm just super excited about them because, like I was telling Monique, a lot of times talk therapy just isn't enough. It always feels like there's something else, and it feels like it's inside of your body. And that's what these therapies, sand play and somatic, gets you out of your head and into the body where a lot of this unprocessed trauma lies. And a lot of adoptees are scared to go in and feel anything, let alone going into your body and your subconscious mind. But if you are serious about your healing journey and you are sick and tired of feeling sick and tired, what have you got to lose? Find a therapist that can help you. Find your healing combination. It is out there. Please get in touch with me. I have a ton of resources. mindyourownkarma@gmail.com. If you want to come on the podcast and tell your adoption story, you're an adoptive parent, you're a birth parent, same Gmail account, mindyourownkarma@gmail.com. If you're wanting to know more about what I do as a somatic therapist using somatic mindful guided imagery, You can go to somatichealingjourneys.com, find out more there. Also, Monique's links are in the show notes if you want to connect with her and some of the therapies that she is doing as well. As always, take what you need and leave what you don't. And always remember to mind your own karma. I'll see you next time.